Welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence. What you are about to hear was originally recorded in 2010 as research for my book, Public Speaking Superpowers. After going through all this content, I've decided to release these 80-plus recordings as a bi-weekly podcast. I hope you enjoy. Hello, and welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is Karma Spence, your host. Today, I'm speaking with Rick Morgan, who's been a professional speaker for 37 and a half years and has had the opportunity to speak in front of millions of people. Welcome, Rick, to Public Speaking Superpowers.
Thank you very much. How are you today?
I am just dandy.
Great. You know, I have a problem with the word public speaking. Why don't we just call it speaking? I mean, it's not something we set up a rostrum in our living room and do privately.
Well, I've already bought the domain, so we're just going to have to go with it.
Oh, okay. Think about that. I mean, people say, I'm in public speaking, and I'll say, well, I'm in private speaking, so there.
But, you know, there is a difference between public and private, because there's things I would say in private that I wouldn't say in public.
Yeah, but I think we're referencing the fact that public speaking means that you can go home and do this in your living room, stand up in a rostrum with a spotlight and a microphone. And
I suppose.
Why don't we just call it speaking, you know? Okay. You have some questions for me. All right.
Yes. Just so listeners can get a feel for your unique expertise, could you tell us a little bit about your journey to success in speaking?
You caught yourself. You were going to say public speaking, weren't you?
Yeah.
My journey started out actually in high school. I wanted to be an actor, and I wanted to be on broadcasting, television, radio, probably radio. I've always loved radio. And a man from General Motors Corporation came to my high school in South Florida and was speaking. Now, I don't remember the topic, but I do remember what he looked like and what he sounded like. And he was touring all over the country on behalf of General Motors doing this presentation. And I was just mesmerized by it. And I thought, that's what I want to do. You see, there are seven lively arts. And speaking is one of them. And I could use my acting ability, and I could use the same kind of ability that I would need to be a broadcaster. So I actually went to college, and my first 2 years, I didn't do too much with my major. I just more or less got the basics out of the way. Then when I went to work on my major as a junior, you know, you have that conference where you meet with an advisor, and they tell you all of the things about the university, and then they ask you, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to be a professional speaker. And the man got a sick look on his face and said, I don't think we offer that, and I don't know a school that does.
Right.
But he said, let me see what I can do. So he visited with the dean of the school of speech, and they said that they would work with me on getting a degree in professional speaking. I think, as a matter of fact, it was going to be public speaking. And they were able to adjust my hours. They let me repeat a couple of classes. I took a lot of independent study so that I could go out there and do the presentations at the Rotary, at churches, and so forth. And then they would ask my contact person to evaluate me, and that was my grade. And the more I spoke, the better they liked it. So I suppose that I'm the first person in America to get a degree in speaking with the intent of becoming a professional speaker.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
And then I had my first speaking engagement in November of 1972. I graduated in June, and I spoke to a group of Cuban businessmen at the McAllister Hotel in downtown Miami, and that was my first engagement.
Wow. Now, this leads me to believe that you probably have a unique perspective on my next question, and that is, do you believe that speaking in front of audiences is a learned skill or something you are born being able to do?
You know, that's a really tough question, and I'll tell you why. Because of what I mentioned before about the seven lively arts, a good speaker, I mean a really good speaker, is part actor, part director, part producer, part lighting technician, part sound man. In other words, you have to do it all, and you have to be able to do that. I mean, I went to classes in broadcasting so that I could learn the terminology. I could learn about lighting, like you have a kind of lighting that is called a key light. You have head-on lighting. You have kinds of microphones called omnidirectional and cardioid. And to be able to go into speaking situations where you're trying to get people to set up the lighting, set up the sound system, and you can talk on their level means a great deal. But then you also have the acting part of it. You have to get on the stage and you have to perform, and you have to write that, and you have to direct yourself, and you have to produce what you're doing. In other words, you are doing just about everything there is in the seven lively arts. And I guess it's something you're born to, because there are natural born actors. There are people who are very good at acting that really have had no training. But then there are those people who have gone through some training and are very good at acting and very good at speaking. The best speaker I ever heard was a high school student. She was the national president of a student organization called DECA, Distributive Education Clubs of America, and her name was Melissa. And Melissa was just astounding to me. I just sat and was mesmerized by watching her make her presentations, and she was sort of a natural at it. And I've always considered myself to be a bit of a natural, because I grew up being an actor. My first appearance as a stage actor was at the age of 3, and it was professional theater. So I think that's born into you, but I think it can be trained into you as long as you're relaxed doing it. One of the things that I have problem with speakers just starting out, especially, is what do you have to offer an audience that is unique, that is different, that is something that others are not presenting, or you're presenting it in a new way, or you have a voice of authority in a topic area that other people do not have? Or are you just basically trying to promote a book or trying to promote some kind of activity? And those kinds of people wash out after 2 or 3 years. Now, I've been doing this 37 and a half years. There's a gentleman who's been doing it 40 years that I know of. And both of us don't think of ourselves as superstars, but we're good technical speakers. I have spoken in as many as 4 different locations in 4 different cities in a 24-hour period. So when you are a good technical speaker, you can talk on a number of subjects and come across with great authority. And you do your research and you do your rehearsal. I think that it's both born and bred, but people who are the best, I'm supposing, are those who are born to it.
You know, that seems to be the consensus with the people I've been talking with, is that there's a definite learned skill ability to it. You may not become a superstar speaker, but you can at least learn the skills enough to help you in your business. But then there are those people who are just born with that spark, that something that basically it was like part of their destiny to be on the stage.
Also, you have to have the knack for running a business. You know, there are people out there who are speaking and maybe even have for several years that are not really running a business. It's like an extended hobby. They're making money, but they don't really know the business aspect of it. They don't know how to do the marketing, the public relations. They don't know how to do the bookkeeping. They don't know how to do any of that. And you have to take this all very, very seriously. It is a business, and it requires that you do things at a very professional business level. The problem is that you're always on. It's one of those jobs, like an actor, where you're always in front of an audience. If it's just a phone call, trying to make a connection to get a speaking engagement. And people will say to me afterwards, "You're awfully quiet." And I'll say, "Well, I use my energy on the stage, and I'm basically pretty quiet off of the stage." But I think it's something you can learn, but you need to learn the business aspects of it too. There's a lot of failure in terms of people not knowing how to run the business of speaking.
And I think that's true of a lot of small businesses. People like get into the part of their business that they're passionate about, and they let all the other aspects of making a business success sort of fall apart because they don't enjoy those aspects.
Well, it's not that they don't enjoy them. Basically, what they're doing is they're getting paid to do their hobby. And when you make that transition to incorporate, to do books, to pay the taxes, to do all of the things that are necessary to actually run a business, then is when I call you a professional speaker, no matter how many times you've spoken before and been paid. Just the word professional doesn't make you a professional, and just the fact that you're paid doesn't make you a professional. What's interesting is the newbie, as I call them, that comes in, and at a conference or a convention, very often speakers will get together at a table and have breakfast or lunch or something together, and you get that new person that says, wow, I spoke to General Motors this year, and I spoke to DuPont this year, and I spoke to Dow Chemical this year, and we're all sitting there looking at them and saying mentally, well, we've spoken to General Motors, we've spoken to Dow Chemical, and we've spoken to DuPont too. It's not really that big a deal. We've done it. Been there, done that, and if they gave me the T-shirt, I wore it.
So now imagine, if you will, that a professional speaker is a superhero. And you are a professional speaker, therefore imagine yourself as a superhero. What do you believe is your main superpower?
The ability to jump over an audience in a single bound.
Can you be a little bit more practical?
And jump back.
Okay.
With a wheelchair. There you go. My superpower, gee. One time I was sitting in a drive-thru waiting my turn, and I happened to look over at the other side of the exit where I was sitting, and there was a hospital sitting there. And I said to myself and God, I would love to be able to heal, to make people better. And as I'm sitting there in this very long line, waiting and waiting and waiting, God spoke to me and said, you do heal. You just do it with your words. There are times when I get before an audience and I have absolutely no idea what I'm saying. I'm off on a short trip to the Bahamas. And I do a prayer. God, give me the words this group of people needs to hear. Make me a messenger and not the message. And there are times I hear it. And when I hear it, that's when I need to hear it too. But then I'll have audiences come up afterwards and say, boy, you were talking right at me. You just moved me. My life is going to be different. My life will be changed. And I suppose my superpower is the ability to heal, to make people feel better about themselves, to show people. I don't do it. I just show them. Show people how to be a better person and how to get rid of that anger and fear and frustration and all of those other things. So my superpower, I think, is the power to heal.
It sounds like at the root of that is the power to create a positive emotional response in your audience.
Well, yeah, but we go back to the fact that I don't always know what I'm saying. God plays me like a trumpet. He just makes the noise, and I just sit there and I'm the instrument. And I've done 3 church services in a large major church and had people come up to me from each one and say, wow, you were talking right at me. But what I said earlier service or the later service, there's still a core message.
Right.
But you might say something that's very different. I like to get in front of an audience, even if it's a business topic, and try to put the humanness into it, try to get people to see that they are not a they, quote unquote.
Right.
They are somebody, and they mean somebody to a company, to an association, to whatever. And they have problems, and they can be fixed. And they can be fixed a lot more easily than you think. And that's part of my platform is the fact that I teach people to keep it simple and smart. In other words, I go around kissing.
Mm-hmm.
If I can teach a person to do that, to let go of all of those sayings like, ugh, there's just aren't enough hours in the day, or I have more to do than I'll ever have time to do them, and busy, 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 and I can't enjoy anything, and you can. You can do those kinds of things, but you have to be able to be passionate. One of the things I think you'll find interesting, perhaps you have not heard this from anybody else, I do not believe that there is such a thing as motivational or inspirational speaking. I don't think we really motivate anybody to do anything, nor do I think we inspire. I think we are signposts. We are guides. We are guidebooks. And it is our job to bring to the attention of the individual what the problem area is that they're experiencing, and then allow them to motivate themselves. Because if we try to motivate them, we're taking away value from what we're doing and the pleasure they will get from doing it themselves.
Oh, yeah. I don't think you can motivate someone who isn't motivated, but you can activate their self-motivation.
Yes, but there's a difference there. People say, oh, are you a motivational speaker? No. Are you an inspirational speaker? No, not really. And of course, it's like, well, then what do you speak on?
Well, I think it's too difficult to say what you really are. So using terms like motivational and inspirational speaker work, but what's really happening underneath is you are activating the person's self-motivation, their self-inspiration.
Right.
Because really, no one's going to take action until they decide to take action. And there's nothing someone outside can make them make that decision. But it can awaken them. It can open their eyes so they go, okay, there is a decision and I can make it.
Right. And do it with grace and dignity and all the rest. Too many people are out there advertising themselves as motivational and inspirational speakers who really are not doing anything like that. They're just going back and, well, to be quite honest, they're just rehashing what somebody else has said before them. I see that all the time on the circuit.
Yeah.
And they're not giving the audiences anything new because audiences now go in and they'll say, oh, another motivational speaker, another inspirational speaker.
Yeah.
But if
I think
have
part of it is they haven't tapped into their unique story.
That's it. You have to find something unique and tell it in a way that nobody else has told it.
Yeah, I mean, we all have that. It's just sometimes we're afraid to let it out, afraid to show it, because it makes us vulnerable.
Right, and then there are people who will tell you, and I've seen this recently more than once, don't be vulnerable on the stage. Don't cry on the stage. Well, if it moves me, why not? I mean, I think something like that moves me actually brings me closer to an audience. And for me to squash that is me doing myself and the people a disservice.
Yeah. But and there's always going to be someone in the audience who doesn't connect, and that's fine.
Oh, sure. But, you know, I do it with humor. I begin with the topic KISS, keep it simple and smart, and we start doing something funny. I give away candy kisses, and I'll say, is there anybody want to come up here and give me a kiss? And they'll say, wait a minute, not you, sir. Maybe the lady next to you, but not you. And, you know, you do it with humor. You get their attention through humor, but I don't tell jokes. I am very against Toastmasters and Dale Carnegie. Now, this is a personal thing, and there'll be people who will hear this and be up in arms with me about it. But I think they teach you to be a speaker by rote. Tell the joke, you know, and then tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you said. And that is a mantra that is repeated. So no humor comes out of it unless it's a part of the script. And they're too heavily scripted. I like to say to people who are new, don't worry about your script. Speak from the heart. Talk to me from the heart. Talk to me one-to-one. I don't care if there's 10,000 people in that audience. Talk to those people one-to-one. And you'll be much more effective as a speaker because you're relating to them. You're connecting with them.
You know, I'm kind of a few minds on that because I was a Toastmaster for several years. And I think that Toastmasters has its place, especially in a business world, just in helping build self-confidence and getting your feet wet. But I think it also depends on your particular club that you end up joining. I mean, I was very fortunate to have a club that was very open, very supportive, and gave the sort of advice you just gave. I mean, Toastmasters has its rules, but it's the people you're involved with in your club that really shape the experience of Toastmasters.
I had a gentleman come up to me after a presentation recently and said, you said 70 times.
Yes.
And I said, okay, are you more interested in the number of times I say or are you more interested in what I have to say on the topic?
Very true.
I agree with you. I think it's a way for a person who has that tremendous fear. I mean, let's face facts. We do for a living as professional speakers what more people would rather die than do.
That's very true.
When survey after survey shows that the greatest fear is not death, the greatest fear is speaking. Yeah, Toastmasters and Dale Carnegie have their place in teaching people just how to get up there and give that report to whatever group they've got and make
right.
them more comfortable. But I find that the people who look at this as a step to professional speaking, I can always tell. I'll go up to them afterwards and I'll say, you were in Toastmasters, weren't you?
Probably. Yeah, I could see that. I think one of the other people I've spoken with as part of this program has mentioned that there's a certain style to people who are trained in Toastmasters.
Right.
And I think Toastmasters is really good if you're going to be doing it in a very structured atmosphere. But I think I would agree with you that if you're going to become more the professional speaker where speaking is your business, you need to break out of that mold because you need to be unique. I mean, if you're just doing a sales presentation so that you can get the next client, uniqueness might not be the thing you need, although it might. But if you're going to get in front of an audience and be the keynote speaker or the motivational or inspirational speaker, you need to step into who you are and your own authenticity. And Toastmasters definitely does not teach that.
Correct. Couldn't have said it better.
Thank you. So what kind of advice would you give someone if they wanted to develop the superpower that you mentioned? I mean, it sounds like it might be something of a challenge, but maybe you have some advice.
Well, when I started out, the line was that there were 10,000 paid speaking engagements available every day and only about 5,000 people to do it. That was in 1972. And a lot of the speakers back then were corporate speakers, like the man I heard from General Motors would go around not only talking about a particular topic for whatever reason, but were also representing a corporation like National Cash Register or some other company. They were actually sponsored by the corporation they worked for. So okay. That made the number even fewer. Today, there are probably 50,000 or more people who want to be a professional speaker, and the same 10,000 speaking engagements per day. The problem is that the market gets very crowded with the wannabes who will never really be much of anything as a speaker. Maybe they'll do 5 or 6 presentations a year and wonder why they're not making it. And it boils down to this. They don't know how. They don't know how to be a professional speaker. This is where you were talking about trained versus by birth. They don't know how to run a business, first of all. That's essential. Second of all is they don't know what to talk about that is unique and different. They are basically trying to make money off of what is a hobby. You know, giving advice is very difficult, especially in these economic times, because last year I had 4 major conferences booked, one with an audience of 20,000 people. And every speaking engagement I had last year canceled. So the whole year of 2009 was a complete washout for me. But I have the means in reserve through investments and savings and so forth that I can live for a while without that being a problem. A lot of people, like any other new small business, don't capitalize properly. They don't invest any money. And they're looking for that first speaking fee to give them the money to capitalize with. And they get frustrated, they get angry, they get disappointed, they get discouraged, and rightfully so, because there's a lot of people out there who want to do this. I've heard meeting planners complain about the new ultra fly-by-night. These are the people who have written a best-selling book. It's been a bestseller on New York Times. And suddenly they're the hot item, and corporations want that hot item to come and speak at their convention. They don't want somebody who's done it for a long time anymore. So a hot item realizes that they can make, A, a lot of money, B, they can get first-class travel, first-class suites, limousines, all kinds of things. But in 2 years, you'll never hear from them again unless they write another best-selling book. Part that I guess I would give advice on is not only to learn the business of speaking, but to do it in such a way that it's a long-term program. In other words, make your goal to be out here 40 years. There aren't very many of us at that level, and that takes a lot of work. I have a booker. I don't have an agent. I do business on a strictly business basis, very professional. And what I found is that people don't have the desire to do that. And if you want to be long-term, if you want to be out here in 40 years, you're going to have a business plan. I mean, I have a business plan just like any other business. I've started 20 corporations in my life. And every one of them has had a business plan. And even my speaking business, which was my third business, has a business plan that I keep reviewing and changing and going over. So it isn't just a matter of getting a speaking engagement. It's doing the whole thing. You've got to do the whole package.
Right. So it really comes down to being very clear on what your goals for public speaking are. Do you want it to be a business, or do you want it to be a lead generation tool? What role in your life, your career, your business does speaking in front of an audience play? And then really just plan that out.
Right. And a lot of people have been very concerned for years doing what they call product, which is your books, your tapes, your CDs, your DVDs, and whatever have you. And I just started product. I used to say I didn't want to do product. I want to give my audience something to take with them. And the old rule is you only talk about 3 things at one time.
Right.
And then you let the audience go, because beyond 3, they're getting bored. And you have speakers that get up there and say, Today, in the next hour, I'm going to give you 10 items, and you can almost audibly hear the audience groan. So you've got to come up with something that even though you're going to speak an hour, you're only going to cover three things. It's those little tricks and things that you learn along the way. A lot of those, I didn't learn those until I got out on the road. I wasn't taught those in college. Nobody knew those things. But when I got out on the road and started meeting other speakers, that's when I started learning the little tricks of the trade, as they say. But I made an investment in myself at the same time by going to listen to other people who had a reputation and then saying afterwards, let me take you to dinner. I'm starting my career as a speaker so that I can ask you the questions. I want to hear your tricks of the trade. I want to hear how you do it, what you do. That was a learning curve for me, in that I had to put out the money and I had to put out the time and I had to put out the effort. And sometimes it costs a lot of money to fly someplace to hear somebody who's only going to speak three or four times in a year.
And, you know, something that you said just now is talking to people who are actually doing it. I mean, I've found a great deal of value in talking to people who are doing a career or something like that that I thought I might get into. And it's helped me decide, yes, I want to, or no, it's not quite for me.
Well, one of the things to consider, and this is one that people really don't consider, I mean, and this is a major deal. I mean, you're going to have to think about this. If you become a hit, are you willing to put up with all of the travel? As I said earlier, I have spoken four different places in a 24-hour period. I'm not talking four places in one city. I'm talking about four different cities.
Yeah, so I've heard a lot of speakers talk about how grueling being on the road can be.
And it's also very lonesome because you only speak for an hour and then 23 hours of the day is yours. And getting there and making sure you're on time, in 37 and a half years, I've only missed one speaking engagement. And that was due to the problem with the airlines and nothing that I could do about it. And I didn't have the cash to go across the airport to charter a small plane to take me.
Not very many people do.
No, but I made sure that next year I put that in my budget, have enough money on an open credit card that I would be able to charter a small plane if I had to. Understand, I started out making, well, that first year I probably made $200. By the 1980s, the late 1980s, I was making $1 million a year speaking 200 days a year. But that's 200 days, that's not engagement, that's 200 days.
Right. So it could be more engagements because you had more than one on a day?
Right.
Okay. Well, I think you've given us a lot of food for thought, and I want to really thank you for opening up sort of the dark side of speaking to some degree, but making it not so dark. It's all doable if you decide it's something you want to do.
If you want to do it bad enough, you will do as I have done and be out here 40 years. But it takes a whole lot of work. It takes a whole lot of travel. It takes going hungry. It takes downsizing your life. And in this economy, speaking engagements just aren't there yet. And it's going to be a while. So those who are just starting out, be prepared because it's going to be a while for you to get engagements, because those who do it for a career and have been doing it for a number of years are doing everything they can to get those engagements that are available. And be prepared to have everything you plan for the year go. It's just gone.
Well, thank you very much, Rick, for speaking with us today. This is Karma Spence, your host for Public Speaking Superpowers, signing off.
Because this was recorded a few years back, I've cut the speaker's contact information from the recording because it may have been out of date. If you would like to learn more about today's speaker, go to publicspeakingsuperpowers.com/featured speakers and click on his picture. I'm working to keep the information there as fresh as possible.